The following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Convention in 2014. The opinions expressed here on this recording are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole.
Hi, welcome everybody. I'm Tammy, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tammy.
This session is the step 6 and 7, me, shortcomings. I've got a timer, thank you very much. All right. We're going to read this as our general stuff. Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of our members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away with you and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous, and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being recorded and posted to the St. Louis OA website. It will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. We request that two Hatters, that is, OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only of their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. And we're mainly talking about step 6 and 7 today. Again, I'm Tammy, compulsive overeater. I've been in program since March of 2010 and gratefully in recovery and abstinence since March 8th of 2010. So I just hit my 4-year mark and it was so fun to get my 4-year coin. I'm one of those people who likes goals. I like to get something. So the night before I made my birthday, I did have a crazy food dream. So I'm still a compulsive overeater. It didn't go away. I dreamt that I had a little piece of cookie and a little bit more piece of cookie and a little bit more piece of cookie until it was a giant pizza pan sized cookie and I was eating the entire thing. And I woke up and I thought, oh no, I have to call my sponsor. Oh no, I have to call my sponsees. And then I realized I didn't really have a cookie. But I'm still a compulsive overeater and it doesn't really go away. I'm going to tell a very short version of my story. If you want to know more, just talk to me some other time. I'll be around. My story, I came to program at 39 years old, and I wished I would have come when I visited when I was 18 years old. I came knowing at 18 that I was a compulsive overeater. I didn't eat like anybody else. You know, I could go to the store and buy lots and lots of ice cream and all of the fixings and eat all of it, and then do other crazy things with it, purging or over-exercising or, you know, thinking, oh, it's okay, and the next morning I could do it all over again. And I went up and down on weight. I'm a lifetime member of 2 different nationwide programs. They didn't work because I gained all my weight back again. I could maintain within their little goals because there were goals. And yet, as soon as, you know, I let my head get back into the craziness, which it was never out of the craziness. It was just that I would restrict so far that then I could lose the weight, and then I think, okay, this is good, I can do this. Now I could just have a little of that. But the minute I had a little, I had my pizza-sized pan of cookies, which is not realistic. And so I went up and down and up and down always. And when I finally hit my bottom, I had not made myself purge. I'm technically a bulimic, you know, all of those crazy words, but at the same time, I definitely figured out ways to get rid of the food. And when I hadn't made myself purge in over 20 years, and I did again, I was at my bottom. And I just was like, there's no other options. I cried and cried for about a week and walked into an OA meeting again after having visited a few times and finally stayed. So at 39, when I came and stayed, then I was ready. And my higher power had been working on me that entire time. He had been training me and giving me lots of tips along the way of what I needed to be doing, but I wouldn't do any of them. I professed in what my spiritual beliefs are, and I thought I knew my higher power, and yet I was putting him in a box and only allowing him to do little parts of what I wanted him to be. And I didn't want him to take over everything, and I didn't want to release all of that to him. And so coming to program and finding a sponsor and naming all of the crazy foods that I used to eat, and she's like, okay, we're going to call all that sugar. And I said, okay, so let's just call that sugar. And so I just give up all that. She's like, yeah, now what else? And so I have 5 specific things that, sugar is my big, big, huge category, but other things that I don't eat. If I eat those again, I start all over and I'm done. I also work very, very diligently at making sure that what I eat, I'm not overeating. So even if it's healthy foods like salads and other things, am I full? Am I satisfied? Where is that level? And I like to be satisfied without being full. Occasionally something will happen. I'm like, ooh, I should have stopped. Or, ooh, I didn't listen quite enough to my higher power. And yet I'm learning. And that's, I think, the most important part of understanding your eating disorder. And I still specifically don't eat my five big crazy things. And so I've been working on that for 4 years. I work with a sponsor. I'm on my third sponsor, so don't feel bad if things change and you need a different sponsor. It's amazing the difference in each of my sponsors, what I've learned from each of them, and how different that changes. I just finished the third time going through the 12 steps. So when I came to program, I'm going to do these so good that I never have to do them again. Well, that doesn't really work. I wish it did, and it might work for you. And a lot of people, they can just maintain. A lot of times we'll say we do 10, 11, and 12 every single day, and then we go back and work. You know, of course you do 1, 2, and 3, and yet I just can't work it that way. That's just not how it works for me. And so my first time through, I thought I was working everything, and granted, most of it was about the food. A lot of family issues came up. A lot of that got taken care of. Then the second time through was on body image. I still work on body image things. They're not over. And yet my body image from when I came to program to now is a huge difference. And then the most recent time I just finished going through them was on codependency, and that I wanted to help everybody else and I wanted to do everything else. And I was still feeling so, so responsible for everybody else's life and not my own. And so in that way, I actually stepped back from a lot of service. Still like to do this kind of service. And so I pick and choose now on what my service is. So my talk on step 6 and 7 is going to be a lot of all of the different ways that I've done step 6 and 7 along the way and what I think now. So I can't talk about 6 and 7 without talking a little bit about 4 and 5. 4 and 5, 4 is a huge inventory, and that you have to take your inventory of all of the things that are bothering you, resentments, fears, sexual conduct, all of those types of things, and then what your part is in it also. And step 5 is giving that away to someone else. And for me, I've always given that away to a sponsor or a step partner. Then at the end of 5, it's now time to relax. And that's also the reason why 6 and 7 are in the order that they are. Because you find out all of this bad stuff about yourself that you didn't know. Almost like going back to step 1 about how unmanageable I was and how powerless I was and how I needed to surrender and how dishonest I was. I thought I was very honest before coming to program. And then I found out all these food things. Oh, that's part of honesty? And so that's changed a lot. So 6 and 7, 6 is really a getting ready step, and then 7 is a really giving it over to your higher power. I'm going to use hand motions a lot. So for the recorder, I put my hands palm up, and then I flip them over, and I put them up towards God, and I give them away. And so throughout the steps, but also especially 6 and 7, it's giving that away. It's letting go of my shortcomings, letting go of my character defects, and then not, so for the people on the recorder, not taking the strings and moving the strings up and down, you know, and I keep having to remember that part, that I tend to start pulling the strings and adjusting them and thinking I'm in control again, until I realize that no, 6 is about turning over all of those defects of character or being ready to turn them over, and 7 is really releasing them and letting God fix them if he needs to fix them. So with 6, I had a lot of fears and resentments still bottled up. I didn't really understand what was going to happen in 8 and 9. And yet now I generally go fast through 6 and 7, and yet I also try to relax in 6 and 7 and go, okay, so yeah, this and this and this are bad about me. Yeah, you're right. This and this and this, maybe they say that, but I don't really understand it yet if that's really bad for me. And then 7 is really giving it all over to God of what would you have me give up and what will you change. One of my biggest examples of something that is a good and bad is I'm very, very organized. Organization can be very, very good because I was the intergroup secretary for a while and I'm organized and I can take notes and I can type things and I can send them out. However, I also have to be very careful not to be controlling over it and making sure that everything has to be done exactly the same way, and that it has to be done this way, and you can't do it any other way, because that's really not what it's about. And so God still says organization is a good thing for you, Tammy. You just can't let it get compulsive where you think it has to be exactly a certain way, and you have to adjust it back and forth. So it is a gift, but it's also a curse all at the same time. I'm still a perfectionist. I often write about, please take this one away. He hasn't yet, and if he chooses to, fabulous. But if not, then I'm stuck with it, and I'll keep working on it. It's not up to me to take it away, though. It's up to my higher power to take it, and he's given it to me for some reason. A lot of times, I think it's my family history, and it helps me get through a lot of the trouble that I had as a child, and I wouldn't be here without it. And so it's one of those defense mechanisms that I still must deed, but I don't really know why I still need it yet. And maybe when I don't need it anymore, then he will take it away. So, one of the biggest things that I did recently with my step 6 and 7 was making a list of everything that you want to change about. So I made a list of what you would stop doing, and I'm going to change it to I. So what I would stop doing, what I would start doing, if there was any other family of origin work I still needed to do, things that I'd like to get or have, and then I put everything down on that list, and everything I'd like to even have in the future. And then I put it away. Getting ready for this talk, I got it back out again. And so I wrote it back in August of last year. I think it was August 7th. And then looking back through the list now, it's such a big difference. That list, so many of those things that now occasionally bug me and other people, I'm like, oh, that's why it's bugging me. Because that one got taken away, and now it's bugging me because I notice it in other people. And maybe there's still a little part in me that is bugging me in me, but yet it's not the same things that it used to be. My first time on 6 and 7, I wrote this long list, and I had this little checklist of all my assets and all my bad things and all my character defects or shortcomings. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at all my long list. And I gave this whole crazy list to my first sponsor, and she was just like, okay. Anyway, and she moved on. And I'm like, wait, aren't we supposed to do something with this? And not really. It really is about being ready to give it up, which is step 6. And then leaving it there is step 7. And letting your higher power decide what he wants to do with it. So my second time through, I made a shorter list. And I thought, oh, good. I made a shorter list. Good. And then my last time, I'm like, I'm not making a list this time. So if you're here to find out more about lists, I like my other lists of what I think I want to God, for God to give me. And yet, really, 6 and 7 is just more and more of that surrender of, God, what do you want to have for me? Do you want these shortcomings or character defects that I think are character defects the same? Or are you going to twist them on me? So much of the time, he's completely twisted them the opposite way, where what I used to think were bad are now good, and what I used to think are good are now bad. Ego is still one of those big ones. And so it's still one of those things where he's changing it, and he changes my perspective all the time. I am an onion. He's constantly revealing more and more layers, and we'll see what he wants me to see or do next. And I don't know what that next part is. And yet I'm always open. And so that's a huge key. A couple other weird little notes. Letting go is the opposite of fear. So when we're trying to hold on to those things, it's that we're afraid to let them go. And yet it's so important that once we do let them go, it's so much easier. And so I try to remind myself of that often. Acceptance, awareness, and then that change. Don't try to change yourself. It won't work because we do it all the time. Working the steps will help change us along the way, but yet God has to actually do the changing. He's the one that's going to change it and allow us to let it go. One of the prayers that I found in one of my books, it's not approved, so I'm just going to read from it instead. It's not a OA literature thing, and so I paraphrased it, so I can read it. So we ask God to take away everything that stands in the way of us having all that we deserve in our lives. So we're really releasing all of that craziness that we don't like about ourselves. We ask God to show us those blocks or those defects, depending on what step we're working on, that we need to be willing to let go of. And to help us become willing, we're not always going to be willing. We're not always going to think it's a good idea to let go of some of those things. We're going to still say, oh, they're assets, they're helpful, they're good for us. And yet they're not always. And so usually anything that I'm trying to hold on to, and I'm, again, for the people on the tape, holding your fist really, really tight. If I'm holding really, really tight to something, it's usually something that he's been preparing me to let go. And I really, really, really have to let it go. And I don't always want to, and sometimes I say no and I stamp my feet. And generally, other OA friends or other spiritual friends end up telling me what I've not been listening to from my higher power, and I'm like, oh, I did it again, I didn't listen. And yet, once I do listen, then I'm like, okay, that's what I needed to be doing. But I need other people. This is a we program. All of our prayers are written that way. So I will end with our 7-step prayer. It says, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of them, good or bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me the strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. My very, very brief version of that is just at the end of my serenity prayer, I always say, your will, not mine, be done. at the end of all my other prayers, your will, not mine, be done. I do my little hand motions a lot because I need to, because I want to still hold on. All my life, I was trying to control that food and I was hanging on by my fingertips as if I was hanging off a bridge, holding on. And yet it didn't work. The only way that it really works is to release it and give it over to God. So thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Mary. I'm a +4 reader.
Hi, Mary.
Would you do me a favor and do the Serenity Prayer with me? Because I always get nervous when I talk. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the difference. I was looking out and thinking, why get nervous with these sweet OA people out there? Like they're not going to do anything bad to me, but it's just something that happens. My name is Mary. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in program 27 years, April 7th. And hi. And brief history of my abstinence, weight loss, and everything. My first 5 years in program, I had a good solid 5 years continuous abstinence and lost, I guess, 70 pounds. And then I ran into some of my childhood issues, and the way lately I've been characterizing it is I had about 21 years of 85%. Most of the time I was abstinent. I gained enough weight back that I wasn't happy, but most people didn't know. In fact, midway, like 10 years into all of this trauma, sometimes eating occasionally, and I probably gained 25 pounds, I had an old timer come up to me and say, could you be on the panel for maintaining your weight loss? And I was just like, because people didn't notice, 10, 15, 20 pounds, you know, you can sort of wear looser clothing. But anyway, recently, in the last few years, I've been really wanting that continuous abstinence back. Who wouldn't? You know, I'd had it. I knew what it felt like. And yet it was eluding me. And I can tell you from experience that I cannot make myself get abstinent. People talk about it being a gift. I just don't get it. I don't understand how it happens. But I know I cannot make myself get abstinent. So if there's anybody out there that thinks that you can make yourself get abstinent, I think that'd be great. But I was never able to do it. And what happened was my really, really good friend who'd been overweight her entire life figured out a way to lose weight through some motivational stuff and through exercise and a particular food plan, and she was really losing weight. And my husband joked and said, she's knocking at your door, honey, because I had, you know, 20 pounds on that I didn't want on. And she was telling me all her goals about running a 5K and doing this or that. And, you know, with friendships, there can be some healthy competition, you know, or unhealthy. But I was beginning to feel like, what's wrong with me that I don't have the goal, and how come I can't get whatever? And I got off the phone one day and was just feeling so down. Like, she knew what she wanted. She knew her goal weight. She knew what she was going to eat. She knew what her goal was for her exercise. And I thought, what is my goal? And, I mean, I was so down. It was a real bottom for me. It doesn't sound like much of a bottom, but it was. And I just with this last breath said, I just want to be abstinent. That's it. And to me, that was my sixth and seventh step about that particular character defect of excess food. You know, when I said, I just want to be abstinent, there it was, that surrender. And actually, I have been abstinent since that day, which is 216 days of abstinence, if I make it through today. So that has been a real joy, and those 20 pounds are gone. Go figure, effortlessly, because of abstinence. But I just thought that, to me, that being in so much pain about it, even mild pain, and to finally come to that, I just want to be abstinent. There was nothing else I wanted. Years ago, when I was in program during my 5 years continuous abstinence, I gave a talk on 6th and 7th that became fairly famous in the old days when we had cassettes. And in it, I talked about I worked in a daycare center and I stepped on little children's fingers' hands when they wouldn't stay in their cots. And it was obviously, shocking, isn't it? I see some faces. But that's a character defect, you know, I would accidentally, oh, I'm sorry, honey, get back in your cot, you know. And I didn't want to be abusive to children in that way, and I couldn't stop. And it was very painful. And when I finally was in so much pain over it that I don't even know how it happened, but all I know is I was ready, and that behavior ended. And I said in this talk, the famous line that everybody laughed was, well, next time I'm just going to totally surrender first without going through all the pain. And I still feel that way a lot of times. But for me, 6th and 7 has always been about the pain of the character defect. Whatever it is causes me so much pain. See, I can't, it doesn't work for me. Like, oh, okay, I have this defect. I'm just entirely ready to let it go. And now I give it to you. It doesn't work for me. I have to be in excruciating pain. That defect has to be causing so much pain in my life that I finally whimper. Okay. And for me, it's almost like a simultaneous step. I'm entirely ready when the pain has taken me down to where I say, I don't want this, take it. What really hit me last night was the skit. I just thought the skit was so amazing with the character defects. And I watched it, and one of the things that I really, really loved about it was this whole committee in the head, because I used to always say that this disease is like a military mission inside your body. You know, like there's somebody in there going, she's walking past a plate window and she's going to see a reflection. Hurry up. Give her the thought. Oh, I think I look good. Oh my God, I look bad. Okay, now she's going to eat. Go. Like I always imagined this, you know, like a real military operation that is always waiting for you. I mean, I've always joked around about that. So to see them on the stage like that, I just thought that was fabulous. So then I love the control issue girl. Not that that's a character defect of mine. She was my favorite. But I thought it was so cute with the washing machine, and then it was the opposite and all of that, and I was really getting into it, but I knew it was going to churn on me. And so I actually, thank God Cindy is a genius who wrote this script. I said, can you tell me the opposite? She goes, I'll just give you a script. So she gave me the script, and I used to be a chemist, and so I like to get it all down. So I had, this one was the opposite of this, and first you do this, and then... But I did, what I actually did this afternoon looking at this was looking at my character defect cycle. So I'm going to share that with you, and then we'll see if anything better comes of it. I looked at control. Yeah, but what comes before control? And this is what I came up with. I think I begin with shame. And I don't know, well, I had some abuse, but, you know, the reasons for the shame are unimportant, really. I have shame. It came to me somehow. And I'm a parent, and I know that I treated all my children the same, and some have shame and some don't. So it's not what was done to me, it's how I took it in. I have shame. Obviously, and that was one of the ones with shame. Then insecurity. Obviously, you're shamed, you're kind of insecure. I think my next step would be caretaking and people-pleasing. You know, I'm insecure, so. And then control, because then I can take care of you and control of you. And then perfectionism comes in, so I'm going to take control of things perfectly. And then I think somewhere in there I become a little arrogant, because I am pretty good at being in control and being perfect. And then I'm pretty well into self-will, because my self-will is so wonderful. And then when you don't do what I want, I get angry. And then I actually, when you still don't do what I want, or when life doesn't do what I want, I get into real fear. Because, you see, if I can't keep things going well, I'm going to have to feel shame. So the fear, I get really fearful. And then when still it's not right, a mild or deep depression kind of comes over me, which is very close to the shame. And the whole thing, this is just my interpretation for me, and the whole mechanism plays out because of denial. Because as long as I deny this whole mechanism, it continues to go. So that's what I came up with for myself. So then I was like, oh, I can unravel this with each of the opposites. It didn't quite work that way for me. In other words, I got very confused this afternoon reading and looking at this. But for me, the key to unraveling it is the opposite of denial, and that is rigorous honesty. Rigorous honesty is the key for me to unravel this whole thing. However, from my experience of 6 and 7, this mechanism, which is all of my character defects, all in one delicious bundle, it's like a track that was laid down in my brain. It's the way I function. For me, the only way that I can go in a different way is through honestly looking at it, working the steps, working with people, asking for help, and then all of the opposites, you know, all these things, self-acceptance, confidence, self-care, God's will, tolerance, humility, serenity, all of these to me are the spiritual aspect of the program. All of that is the way I want to be. It's my true self. It's who I want to be. It's the recovered me. When people are like that to me, I feel love and goodness. I mean, it's just, to me, that's all of the whole, that's what I want. I want all of that. But, and I practice a lot of that, but this other track is still there. And for me, it doesn't get removed. It, maybe one day the whole track will be removed and disappeared like a magic. But I remember going to one talk where they said, they looked up remove in the dictionary and it said put it at a distance. It doesn't disappear, it just removes it. So for me, I can either function in this or I can move into some other ways of being. I'll just give you a concrete example of how it would work in my life. My son, and I've talked about this in other meetings, but my son just got a whole bunch of tattoos last year, and he's a darling boy. He would have been so cute without them. Real clean-cut kind of a kid. And he got many. Like, he began with one, and you know, I was in denial, and they became many. And what happened to me was I immediately went to fear. I was in the fear. I mean, I probably had all of this other stuff happen automatically. Shame about seeing that. Insecure. Oh, my God, we got to take care of it. Stop it. Oh, no, no. And then he'd already done it. I couldn't stop it. I couldn't control it. So I was in fear. And then my stomach was almost sick, my depressive feeling. I mean, I just couldn't shake this feeling. And for a long time, it was sort of like I blamed. It's because he got a tattoo. That's the denial. I'm having this feeling and I'm in fear and I feel depressed because he had that tattoo. So I'm in denial about what it is. I'm in my character defects, but I was in denial. And finally, the pain of it became so great. And of course, some loving sponsor and I talked about it. And it's like, okay, let's get rigorously honest. And rigorously honest means I'm going to move over and use some of these spiritual gifts, these other ways. And I wanted to say, well, the opposite of fear is faith, but I could take any one of these. I could take self-care. If I say, if I'm in fear and depression over my son's tattoos, and I say, all right, I'm just going to do self-care. If I go in and take care of me, put the focus back on me, all of a sudden I'm not in this character defect mechanism. I'm back in on a spiritual path. I'm on my new path, as one of my sponsors used to always say. I've moved into the new way. I can take faith, okay? I just have faith that my son is okay, that he's going to be fine. That'll take me back into that level of all of it, serenity, self-acceptance. I could take confidence. I'm confident that I don't really know best for him. That tolerance, I don't even know what's going on with another person in their life and the choices they've made, but I have to be okay with it. Humility, self-acceptance, I am like this. I get into fear. I go back into my character defects often. For me, it's rigorously, honestly looking and noticing when I'm in them and then reaching into that other area. And you know, the word that I haven't used today is God. And so I guess I'll end with that part of it. I used to try to figure God out the way I used to try to figure out chemical formulas. Like I had it all figured out. And for me, that character defect has been removed, trying to figure out God. And all I've been trying to do is just take care of myself, stay in my own business and notice when my character defects are riling up their head, and then just being honest and saying I'm in my character defect and really being willing to not be in them. That's all I've been doing. I haven't been using the word God or saying, God, please take these away. All I've been doing is just being honest and staying in me, taking care of me, not worrying about what other people think of me, not worrying that other people saying, does she believe in God? What about that? Not worrying that I eat sugar. When we were going past the cookies, I was laughing because some of the people were like, a lot of us were laughing actually that the cookies were there. And some people are saying, you know, I don't eat sugar. And the people who don't eat sugar are walking past the cookies. It's not an option. Somebody like me who doesn't take a compulsive bite, I'm laughing. It's not an option for me either. So, you know, we're in the same boat. But anyway, I don't have to convince anybody about what my spiritual world is right now, or about how I eat, or about my son having tattoos, you know, and I've come to the part where I've got a gorgeous son and he's got a lot of tattoos, to really, just really begin to learn to love me. And when I see those character defects, just as I said, finding that other place to go, which is the place. I've never been happier in my life using this principle of, if I notice pain, I let it eat on me until I let it go and I step out of it and I go into a different place. I'm really, really grateful for this program and all of it's taught me. And when they said that about how long you've been in the program instead of how long you've been abstinent this time, I really loved that, because at the end of the convention, you know, at the beginning of the convention, they said, how many years have you been in program? And they used to say, if you've been abstinent 20 years or, you know, and you just have this, you've had people who have been here 30 years and had so much recovery, and maybe they'd had a slip the day before so they couldn't stand up. And I just love the way we love and accept each other just the way they are. We are. And, you know, Roseanne died this year, and she was so imperfect. Her character defects were certainly not miraculously disappeared, but she sure worked this program, and she's an example to me that I'm just going to continue to try to work it to the best of my ability. So thanks so much.
Okay, we now have questions and answers, and I'll get the question and answer basket in a minute. We'll do those, but then I'll read the guidelines too in case people want to come up and share. Please stick to the topic of the meeting. Anyone wishing to share, please line up to the right of the podium and step up to the mic when it's your turn. Pitches are limited to 3 minutes to allow all to share. Speaking implies you're released to the taping company for the recording, so if you don't want your name, give a fictitious name. But we do have questions. All right, I'll read them, and then Mary or I will decide what we're going to do. Doesn't it make it harder to let go of a character defect when we don't realize that there are gifts in many character defects?
Well, sure, I'll try that one.
I'll read the next.
You know, for me, it's really simple. If it causes pain, then it's not a good part of that character defect. So, you know, I'm very good at it. As you said, I'm very good at organizing, and then when I notice it's causing me pain, then I've stepped over into the character defect part. To me, it's pretty easy.
I'm going to go with her. The next question is, thoughts of defects or shortcoming cause many of us to feel guilt or shame. Is this something that you've dealt with? Any wisdom to share? I'll try on that one. So definitely, at the beginning, is the honesty one is still like, I thought I was so honest. And yet, you know, I wasn't even the littlest bit honest. I was being dishonest with every person I met because food was all consuming. I was in food all the time and I was spinning my wheels. I was lying. I lived in a condo where lots of people could see me coming in or out, and I ate a lot of fast food. And so I would put it in other size bags. And then I realized that, oh no, now they can see the cup. So they still know that I got a huge crazy soda. Did they really care? Probably not. I've talked to one of my old neighbors. The shame and the guilt is within me. I have to deal with it. I have to keep turning it over to my higher power. So yeah, I've had lots of, how do I get rid of it? Work in the steps. I spend a lot of time in my 8 and 9 forgiving myself. And so the 6 and 7 is really saying, yes, they're there. Even the ones I don't know about yet, that God hasn't opened up the onion yet, I'm willing for him to keep unraveling the onion. So I give all of them up. But then 8 and 9, I really work hard at forgiving myself, at writing letters to myself. I went to a body image retreat here in St. Louis a few years ago, and at that conference, we spent a lot of time writing to our body, our body writing to our higher power, and our higher power writing back to both of us. I still do that. I still make my sponsees do that a lot of times too. I do it on other topics now besides body image. I don't always have to write to my body and then to higher power anymore. I can write back and forth. But really releasing all of that guilt and that shame of, it's okay. Most of my shortcomings that I see now were given to me. Like they were there to help me get through situations that I wouldn't have gotten through otherwise. And I needed them. And I don't need them anymore. And that's what's so nice. And God has removed some of those from me. They're not all gone. But it's a lot easier than it used to be. You want to share on that one? How can you tell when your defects have been removed or are being removed?
If I feel good, then it's not there. I just spend so much of my day just feeling pretty darn good about me and about the people in my life. And for that moment, I'm not living in my character defects. I'm living in serenity, self-acceptance, tolerance, love, generosity. And I notice the minute I've touched my foot onto one of them, he said last night, playing with fire. The minute I feel the funny feeling in my stomach, anxiety, a little bit of tension, it's like right then, oh, they're back. And I mean, that's the way it is for me. It's back. It can be back just like that. And it's just that quickly that I can go, no, I'm not willing to do that anymore. I don't want to live that way. It's just like food. And then it's like, to me, it's like, it's all back. It's a choice for me. To me, it's a choice. I can live in my character defects, or I can live in the spiritual world. Which do I want to do? And I don't have to live in the defects, although mine certainly aren't very far removed. You know, it's like a step over.
All right. Our next question. What is your first reaction when character defects come up, and what do you do? I kind of think you answered that one.
I call my away people. I mean, seriously, I am so blessed. I have an entire phone ready to go at all times. I have a thing on my ear. And it's just like, the minute I notice it, I call. And if it doesn't just go away, I call. And I call any time of day.
I ditto that. On my phone, even when I first came to the program, I put everybody under O instead of OA, so that if anybody ever finds my phone. So all of your last names are O. But I did it immediately. I change it every once in a while. My sponsor is Speed Dial 12. My next OA person that I call all the time is Speed Dial 13, because that makes my life simple. But then I have tons of other O people. Some of you are probably in there under O, so that I can always find you. I don't have to think too hard. I just have you. And if the first one doesn't answer, I can keep going down the list.
And I got to say something else on that one about the thoughts of defects come up, feeling guilt or shame. If I have the feeling, like, you know, I said something to my son or whatever it is, and I call, it's that person on the phone that takes away my guilt and my shame. They go, no, you are not back to your old self. Because I say, I've done so much work, and look, I'm right back where I used to be. No, you're not. Do you know what you were like? No. You hardly ever do this. You're doing it today. You can get right out of it. And they're the ones who take the guilt and the shame off me.
Okay. Our last question specifically to me, but I'm going to answer it more general, and then feel free to ask me later. Can you talk more about going through the steps with codependency? So I'll talk more in general and purpose. So I did the first steps all the way through, like just about food. I thought I was doing it on everything. I wasn't, but I tried. And so then the second time through was body image, and then my most recent was codependency. For one reason is because I used books that weren't approved, so I won't talk about that book, but come talk to me because it's a really good book. So the other reason is that you have to figure out what works best for you. So I was mostly spawned through the big book the first time. I still mostly work big book. However, I work all of the other OA materials too because I love them all. And I'm a perfectionist, so I'll just do them all. But what I do now is when I go through, especially big book, is like doctor's opinion. Whenever it's talking about alcohol, I changed it into body image, or I changed it into codependency. When I went through I'm thinking, blanking out on the next book of the big book. What's after Dexter's Opinion? Bill's Story. So going through Bill's Story, and he's talking about alcohol, I'm thinking about either body image or codependency or whatever topics that you guys might need to focus on. That's where my focus is. And if I keep my focus on that, then I'm like, okay, so what's happening in me that I need to be changing? And I say that I'm changing it, and yet it's what my higher power is bringing me to change. I didn't pick those two topics. I didn't want to work at it. I thought it was done the first time. I'm just going to stay in 10, 11, and 12, and I'm going to be wonderful. No, it didn't work that way for me. Some people, they can. Good for them. I'm so glad. I wish they'd tell me how. They do, but it doesn't work for me. So I really work my big book of that's my biggest core. I do my step four just like I did my step four the first time, except it's more on those topics. I have like little checklists. If you went to the step four and five, and if you didn't, I can tell you the person who did it because she has newer versions of those checklists. But I still go through my checklist. I really have the checklist in my head. I have it on my iTouch. I didn't get a smartphone yet. I'm going to try this year. But I have iTouch, and so I have lots and lots of stuff typed in there for me so that I always have it in my ready. Because sometimes weird things happen in the middle of the day, and I'm like, wait, I need to go through my inventory. And so I go through my inventory and figure out what's going on in my head. Some of it I have to immediately call my sponsor and go, this is what's happening. Majority of the time, just like Mary said, is, okay, calm back down. It's really not as bad as you think. Then I do my 6 and 7 of, this is what I think that God has shown me as my defects, and I release those. Sometimes it's not soon. Sometimes I need to think about them and figure them out more and understand them more. And then as I do my 8 and 9, majority of my body image codependency stuff was all about me. It didn't have as nearly as much to do with other people as I thought it would have had to do with them. It all comes back to what I put in there. And so there are, of course, always some other people that I have to deal with. A lot of fear comes in. For me, the first time it was all about resentments. Second and third time was way more about fear. Now it's kind of settling into both. And then 10, 11, 12 is maintaining all of it and making sure that I continue to keep going and not just, that's just how it works for me. I don't know how else to say it. Okay, so we are finished with questions, unless anybody else has any questions they want to raise their hand. But we still have like 5 to 10 more minutes if you want to come share.
Hi, I'm Beverly, compulsive reader.
Hi, Beverly.
Hi. I've shared this at a few meetings just because I just think it's so cool. I was in a grocery store and was taking care of myself. I'd eaten something first and then I was going back to shop. And there was somebody in the checkout line and I knew that I knew him. And my automatic reaction in the past would have been just to go on by him because I couldn't remember his name. I didn't know who he was, you know. And he wasn't going to see me, you know. And it's like, okay, what's the right thing to do here? The right thing to do is to say who I am and say my name, you know. And he goes, oh, you know. And we talked for a little bit, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name, you know. And he said his name. As soon as he did, I remembered who he was, like this old friend of the family or what have you, you know. And I thought, what a gift that conversation with him was that I wouldn't have had if I had followed with my old isolation method of being ashamed because I didn't remember who he was. And it seemed like there were a couple more things over the next week or so that came up like that, where I introduced myself to somebody. Maybe it's even showing up this weekend where I'm saying to people, hi, this is who I am, or what have you, people that I should probably remember from the past, their names or what have you, you know. And it's just like this freedom, and it came from like, you know, what's the right thing to do in this situation? And in all those situations, it was so much richer than what my experience would have been if I had just hidden off somewhere and let shame run the show. So I just thought that was pretty cool. And then to look at it afterwards and say, hey, I'm doing that different than what I would have done before. So that felt good.
Thanks, Beverly.
I'm Ellen, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Ellen.
Thank you for speaking on both on step and sip. Yeah. Yeah, Mike, somebody mentioned it. It's like, why am I nervous in front of friends? So, you know. But I've been coming since 97, and I finally just did 6 and 7 not too long ago, because in the program, you know, I've gotten through step 5 a number of times, and that's when I stopped either working the program, talking with my sponsor, and I did have a sponsor saying, you know, oh, you're on step 6, and it's like, I was one of those that I never called. So, you know, but I've been with this current sponsor, and this is the longest that I've been with a sponsor, and it's been over 5 years. I'm not sure what I'm getting at, but, you know, I think I took those 6 and 7 literal, you know, and it's hard for me to think literal and also bringing, you know, the higher power into it. You know, it's like, damn it, here's God again, you know, and he's got to relieve everything. So, you know, I make mountains out of molehills, and, you know, I think just, you know, things are going to be easy to let go sooner rather than later. I know that somebody had mentioned, you know, with the character defects, it's like, what is it doing for me and what is it doing to me? So, you know, I think with this program and with the defects, I'm just going to be working on something, you know, every day until I'm no longer here. So I'm glad that everybody's here, and with that, I'll pass.
Hi, I'm Kate, and I'm a food addict.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. I've been in program 14 years and have been given a little over a year's abstinence and had about 80 pounds released from my body. I'm on step 4. I have never gotten past step 6 or through step 6. And something happened this week that I'm still trying to process, and it was a character defect. And there was a project at work, and there are three of us on part of a committee, and we had gotten through the first step of the project, and I kind of knew where I thought it should go next. And also, I was asked to run for a position on another part of the committee. I hadn't thought of doing it, but once I did, I thought, okay, I'd like to do it. And so I thought, wow, if we do this project, I could report on it, and then maybe people will vote for me. And so I sat on it for a week, because I knew what we were going to do. And I was really busy. And then I sent it out, and the other two people said, no, we really need to get together and talk about this. And bam, it just hit me. Tons of shame, and like I was like, I'm in OA, I'm in recovery, I'm working the program, this shouldn't happen, I shouldn't have character defects, I shouldn't be doing the wrong thing, and I really don't want to be the kind of person who takes over, controls, is arrogant, and all of this stuff, and it sucked, it absolutely sucked, and my favorite thing to do in the past is go into denial and say, oh, screw it, binge, I'll be perfect tomorrow, it won't count. And I sat and I faced it, and it was ugly, and I looked at it, and I would rather not be that kind of person, but it sounds like part of me is that kind of person, and the sooner I accept it and turn it over, the less destructive I am to other people and to myself. So I was really looking forward to this session, and thank you very much, both of you. And I'll pass. Thanks.
Then we will go ahead and close a little bit early. Do you care what we close with? Well, everybody seems to know that I put my hand in yours, so we'll do that.
Put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own sustaining willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works when you work it, and you're worth it.